see in terms of the evolution of business and where businesses are trying to get to is in much and all as we're so connected now, how do we bring a little more of the human side back into business? Because that's probably what's going to get you a little more performance or a little more engaged in the end.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. This week, we meet a chap who I thought before I'd met him must have invented some sort of machine to squeeze about 10 more hours out of the day. But when you meet him, he's one of the most humble, down-to-earth and self-aware people I've ever met in my entire life. His self-awareness levels are just off the charts. I think this is one of the secrets to make him such a good entrepreneur. I am talking about Mr. James Rogan, former Dublin footballer, All-Ireland winner, company founder by two. So he's an incredibly fascinating guy. I got a huge amount of this out of this interview myself personally. I've taken a huge amount of key takeaways. And on that, I'm thinking about breaking down some of the key takeaways from each podcast into short little clips, just so we can go back and refresh them really quickly. Also, obviously, I'll post up the full episode every week, but I think afterwards I might chop down small little clips and key takeaways. If that's something you think that'd be interesting, do let me know either by dropping me a tweet or an Instagram DM or whatever, and just let me know if you think that'd be interesting. I'll add that in. I've two quick requests. I'm looking to speak to more female entrepreneurs, and I'm also looking to speak to more entrepreneurs who are based outside Dublin. So if you have suggestions for either of those, do shoot me a message again, wherever you fancy. And that is it. Without further ado, here's episode 27 with Mr. James Rogan. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a million, Gary. Cheers.
So the awkward question I ask everyone, give us an intro to yourself.
Yeah, James Brogan is my name. Current role is CEO of Pep Talk. And prior to that, I was Managing Director of Legacy Communications. Prior to that, I was a solicitor. So I've had a varied enough career over the last sort of 10 years. So looking forward to chatting through a little bit of that journey today.
Cool. So how did you start off as a solicitor?
Yeah, so I suppose started off, did commerce. Again, probably not a huge sense of what I wanted to do at that point. So I did commerce in UCD and got to probably get a bit of a sense of business, what was involved. Probably left commerce then and, yeah, stumbled into law. Did a summer internship in a solicitor's firm called Gartland & Fury. Again, on the recommendation of my dad, who I think at the time was like, you need a summer job, you need a few quid. So did that for a summer. And then, yeah, probably just stumbled into continuing into the law, and I ended up doing 3 years of exams in Blackhall Place, followed by kind of an apprenticeship, which is kind of more practical. So I guess looking back now, much and all as I'm not practicing, it does give you a good grounding. It gives you a certain probably perspective in terms of looking at challenges logically, I guess. Yeah. The law is a very, you know, it's a very process-led, you know, you've got to go through step by step by step. And I think when I went into business then, I probably went in with that mindset and would probably now be pretty okay at sort of reflecting on things and kind of looking at it in a logical way. So much of all, as I'm not a solicitor now, I do think partly the training has been beneficial in kind of my progression since then.
And how did you move away from that then?
Yeah, so I suppose I qualified and I did a year. It was around the time of the recession, so a lot of my friends were leaving to go to London and farther afield to study law. And I just had this niggling, it's weird, it's kind of hard to describe to people, but I kind of just had this feeling that, yeah, I wanted to do something else. It was hard to describe what it was, but I felt that I wasn't going to do law for the rest of my life. So at the time, I was lucky enough to be part of the Dublin GA team. And at the time, Pat Gilroy was the manager of the team. Okay. So Pat probably, I suppose in that early part of my career, would have been a bit of a mentor to me, and also Bernard, my you know, initial business partner in Legacy, and he's also part of Pep Talk as well. So would have kind of bounced some sort of ideas around at the time, the Dublin sort of brand and the commercialization of the Dublin brand. Okay. So Pat actually, while I was a solicitor towards the back end, began to get me to look at sponsorship and sponsorship agreements. So I probably much knowledge. You probably look at the Dublin team now and they're, you know, a really well-structured, organised, commercial outfit. At the time, it was very early stages, seven, 8 years ago. So we would have initially done some relatively small deals with, I remember Aer Lingus would have been a partner. We would have got in Ross Nutrition as a sort of supplement partner. So the early stages of the commercialisation, the Dublin GAA, I kind of fell into that, I guess. But it definitely awoke within me a real passion for, one, I had ownership of something, and two, I suppose I was applying a little bit of what I'd learned from the law into what was now, you know, sponsorship, sport. I looked at a lot of sponsorship agreements and contracts and stuff like that. So it became for me, I like distinctly remember the sort of 9 to 5 and then the 5 to 9. So I began to have this idea that from 9 to 5, I do my solicitor work, and then from 5 to 9, I just began to really immerse myself in sports sponsorship and everything around that. The States was obviously a big area of interest for me at that time. So yeah, I just knew, I suppose, at the time that it helped. It was a real kind of passion point for me getting through the day, to be honest, at that time, because I just knew it wasn't for me. And probably the other really important point for me at that time was I sought someone outside of my circle of friends to help me with my career. So a guy by the name of Fran, who works in a company called Amaze, describing himself as a development of potential expert, a dope.
Was that through Dublin or did you
it was actually through the GPA, so the Gaelic Players Association. So again, I'm probably one of the earlier players that got involved in that, but definitely would have huge would put, you know, huge merit in what the GPA did for me in that early stages in helping to kind of position my career. So distinctly remember meeting Fran in the Castleknock Hotel and describing my role within the legal world and just saying I just didn't think this was for me, and not really knowing what I wanted to do, explaining a bit about what I was currently doing with the sponsorship, was feeling like this was something that was energizing me inside. And he did a couple of sort of psychology tests on me to help me understand, you know, the type of person I was and the type of character I was, and what potential careers would suit. And probably from that, then the idea of setting up a company probably spawned. So I remember, again, I would have sat down with Bernard and I kind of said, listen, I'm kind of doing this sponsorship stuff with Pat and with the Dublin team. Obviously, he was playing on the team, so he was aware. He said, well, you know, do you want to look after some of my commercial stuff as well? So that was grand. And I was like, okay, perfect. That's another little step away from what I'm doing at the moment. So at that time, I would have been doing a little bit of commercial work with Dublin GAA, a bit of then, I suppose, let's call it, you know, agency work. So I would have represented Bernard, one or two other GAA players at that time, and then myself and Bernard said, you know, maybe there's a market here. You know, he obviously had a good network. He at the time wasn't even working. He'd kind of gone on a bit of sabbatical, having trained as an accountant in Fargrant Sparks. So we sat down in Castleknock Hotel and kind of chatted a little bit about what we wanted to do, and then we met across the road in Lucan here, a tax consultant by the name of Dave Clancy. So myself, Dave and Bernard met and decided to form a company, which we came up with the name Legacy. So Legacy was formed roughly 7.5 years ago, with an initial kind of play to definitely, from a tax agency perspective, to help out on the player agency side. So definitely our probably first iteration, and probably like every business person, you evolve as you go. And I think probably the idea we had at day one, and when I look at the company now, it's really hard to probably imagine where we've come, and obviously happy to go into that journey in a little more detail. But definitely in the early stages, it was a vision of trying to help players, you know, whether here or in the UK. So one of the first hires we brought in was a guy by the name of Shane Supple. So I would have played, I would have gone to school with Shane. He was a professional soccer player.
I was going to say the name rings a bell.
Yeah, so he would have played professional soccer in the UK for over 10 years, came back then and started playing GA for a number of years, and then joined actually Bowes and was the soccer keeper with Bowes. He's just retired last year and the knees gave way. But again, Shane would have probably have seen both sides of professional soccer, would have seen the good and the bad.
Right.
And kind of we felt at the time that, I suppose, with the professional expertise between myself, Dave and Bernard, combined them with Shane's understanding of the soccer world, would have given us a really nice platform to develop that business. And we would have, I suppose, at that time also had a sense that once you start representing players, you begin to become immersed a little bit more in the world of sport, in the world of sponsorship. So we began to quickly build up a pretty good network of brand contacts as well. So they'd ring us up and they'd say, we have a particular brand campaign, we're looking for a particular individual to get involved, would you have any recommendations?
Okay.
So we began to become part of the conversation that brands were coming up with. And I suppose over time, to be honest, the agency world became, I suppose if I'm honest, difficult to navigate. It's probably one of those worlds that there's lots of different players in it. And when we came into the UK, there was a steep learning curve for us.
Because it sounds incredibly sexy. It's probably like, you know, I want to be a professional athlete or I want to be an agent. You know,
exactly. Yeah. Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, totally.
So I think, and listen, I'd be like partly, yes, there was the appeal of working in sport. Was something that in the early stages was very exciting, and being able to combine my professional background with my passion was pretty special at the time. But yeah, I suppose roughly 2 years in, we began to see, when we looked at the direction of the company, that the revenue we were bringing in from our sort of brand consultancy work was beginning to outstrip what we were doing on the agency side. So over the course of the next sort of 18 months, we began to sort of pivot into more of a brand consultancy than a player agency. And we still do get inquiries now and again, but we're very much now a brand communications agency with two main specialisms. One would be sports sponsorship, so that remains a core part of our business. And our second piece is around lifestyle. So lifestyle brands. We recently started working with the guys in Cali Cali, so that's Tom Gannon and the Fulfill guys.
You know the name that keeps popping up.
Tom's a great character and good enough to give us an opportunity to work with him there recently. So we've grown now. We've 18 staff. Kind of split evenly enough between sports sponsorship and lifestyle. I think on reflection, the evolution of our company would be something that I would be very mindful of now, in terms of for any business to be very, very aware that, I guess, what you're doing now and maybe what you are doing in a year's time could end up in different. So by listening to our, I suppose by listening to the people we were working with and understanding the value we were bringing, we were able to develop that out.
And how did you know then it was time to kind of move away from the sponsorship and agency side, or from agency to sponsorship? Was it a monetary decision or was it a time decision? Or
I suppose like any business in the early stages, I remember our first sort of business plan and our financial metrics would have been, pretty conservative. I mean, I think first 2 years we didn't pay ourselves anything, So you kind of, I think like any business, you go into it, you kind of go all in and you kind of say, we're going to give this a proper go. And the reality of our business was we were kind of, you eat what you kill, that we were very much trying to just get from A to B. And after 2 years, we were in a position where we were able to pay ourselves a small wage. But when we looked at the revenue that we were generating and where it was coming from, and I think that's so important. It was so important for us anyway, to understand where we were actually making money. Because sometimes, unless you actually go in and look at it, you kind of have a notional view of what our business was,
but what actually, you wanted to be as
exactly
well.
And like we know, like the aspiration when you come in day one is that this is my idea, it's going to be a success, and I don't really care what happens in the meantime. It's just going to be a success. I think on reflection, it's kind of like you have an idea, you go in, and then through the evolution of every business, you kind of land on where your sweet spot. And that's through a mixture of chatting to people, analyzing your numbers, getting honest feedback from people as well, like, is what we're doing something that you're interested in buying? And I think we evolved to a point where we felt that the brand space was where we could really live and where we could, do relatively well in. And obviously the first thing we did then was kind of like say, right, this is our team. but we don't really have an expert in this space. Okay. So I think, again, part of, I think, why we've managed to have a relatively good, successful organization with legacy was our understanding that you're only as good as the team that you have with you. And we didn't have someone with the necessary brand experience that we could really say, okay, we're nailing our colors to the mast here. This is what we're going to be. And here's our team. And they have the necessary experience and expertise. So I think appointing a guy by the name of Kevin Moore from a company called Fleischmann Hilliard was a really, really important milestone for the company. It allowed us to immediately get kind of credibility in the space. And again, I would sort of like to think that moving forward in whatever business I'm involved in, that you have to really understand your weaknesses as much as your strengths, and understand that part of the job has been very self-critical and being self-aware of what you're good at and what you're not good at. And definitely for us, you know, part of our growth has been around Kevin's ability to, one, I suppose, definitely in the early stages, he complemented maybe some of the stuff that I wasn't great at, but also then that hard experience in the area was really important.
And what would your typical early deals be? What were you doing for brands, and how are you marrying that with what you were doing?
I remember our first sort of real brand gig was with a company called Skins. So you might know it, the tights.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're the compression tights. So again, they just had completed a deal with Dublin GAA. And I remember having a conversation with someone in Skins and said, listen, you know, do you guys know anything about how you're going to promote this partnership? Mm. And it was funny, it was kind of, this happens sometimes, like they actually hadn't thought a lot about that. They were very keen on doing a partnership with Dublin.
Okay.
But they actually hadn't thought about how they were going to actually build a promotional campaign around it. So we kind of said, listen, yeah, we're just the legacy's here, yeah, ready to do business. And we went away. We remember kind of getting some help from a friend of mine to help with a bit of a PR release in the early days. This was before kind of Kev and the guys had joined. So we literally were kind of very much, just to our point earlier on about kind of YouTubing skills,
we
were very much just on the fly figuring out how we were going to build that campaign. And
but you're out there doing it. I think that's the key.
Yeah,
a lot of people, we talked about earlier briefly as well, in terms of loads of people have ideas for business, but you guys are actually out there doing it.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, well, there was, like everything, we didn't have all the answers, but we probably had an awareness of where we maybe needed a bit of help, and we filled in the gaps. And I think most businesses in the early stages and chatting to people, you never really have all the answers at the start. I think you kind of just end up figuring it out and getting to the point you need to get to. So, and the beauty of it is, once you've done it once, you have the experience then. And that's, you know, like every business is like, what I could go in then to someone having done the Skins sort of brand campaign, that was now a case study. That was now an example of us having experience. So we kind of figured out the first one,
okay,
and then managed to leverage that to get over the next 12 months, similar campaigns in the sports sphere where we'd say, right, here's your campaign, this is what we think you should do in terms of the players you should work with, here's some PR, some digital marketing advice that we would kind of position as part of a broad maybe 12 month campaign.
Okay.
So it was a very it was great because you ended up, you know, spending a lot of time with sports people. You ended up working with companies such as Sportsfile that had organized the photo calls, developed a great relationship with them, and they were very supportive, I think, of us as a young company, what we were trying to do. And they'd help you as well, you know, they'd say, you know, this is some stuff we've seen other companies do, you know. So there was that sort of shared sort of learnings as much as anything. And definitely that's been my experience across all the, you know, like people. I think relationships is huge in business. Like, it's just been something that from day one, we've, whether it's a client, whether it's a partner that works with us, you know, people are, I think, of a mind to help each other out. And I definitely would feel that that's been an important sort of part of our journey as well when it comes to the relationship piece and leveraging them to help grow. And it's mutually beneficial. Like, we've over the years, you know, Sportsfile have worked with us for over 8 years now.
Wow,
you know, and that's been based on the relationship and the trust that we've had with them. You know?
I think people forget that nowadays in terms of, like, you know, social media, you know, you can reach out to anyone you want, but people still forget it's a relationship business. Every business is, no matter what you're doing.
Big time. And I've met so many business people that are running big organizations, and yet they, when you talk to them about their big clients and their big strategic partners, they are, you know, so disciplined about FaceTime. They're so disciplined about meeting people. Mm. And if it's coffees, lunches. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously we're more connected than ever. Mm. But there will always, I think, be that part where the face-to-face relationship piece is just so important.
Long-term, absolutely. I think people get skate by in short-term on very transactional.
Yeah.
They might get a year or two out of it, but long-term it always comes back to bite them.
I think that I would tend to have that sixth sense. I haven't spoken to such and such a person you know, 6-8 weeks, you know, I would not like to think that they didn't think that they were important. Mm. And I think that that's the key, is to make, like, they are important to you. Like, every client is important, from the smallest to the biggest. And I think when you're like us that grew it from nothing, you know, you're very conscious of the first person that paid you €500 to do this, you know. I'd like to think that that person is still as part, you know, they may never be able to pay you, you know, what someone who joins 6 years into the business does.
It's all relative. That 500 may as well have been 500,000.
What's nice. Like, we've definitely we're very lucky to get some in the early days, get some great support from different networks, you know, the GA community, obviously with my family, has been huge, and we've leveraged that, and I don't make any apology for it. It's been great.
But why would you not, though? I think that's the thing. Why would you not leverage that?
Yeah, well, I think sometimes, certainly for me, I think you have, like, I think the nature of certainly the GA family is one that people, and I know, and that's not just the GA, I've met plenty of people in the soccer world and the rugby world and other communities of people that want to help each other, and really it's just about kind of finding those people and trying to reach out to them, and not being, for me, I'd probably, like, just asking for help, asking, you know, say I'm starting a business or I'm doing this, would you mind giving me an hour of your time? Like, I'm still doing it. I've texted some people there recently who I've never met, but I've got a connection into them, and I'm now a little bit further down the line, still very much in feeling in startup mode, but like, haven't seen the benefit of it. I'm still like, just send them they might not come back, but they might, and you might gain something from that conversation.
It's like, so, this podcast, that's how it started. Would you mind having 60 minutes?
Yeah.
And like, literally everyone bar one person has said yes.
Really? Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's genuinely incredible.
Yeah, because obviously I'm sure lots of busy people, you know, lots of people doing
extremely busy, like yourself, really busy.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's so willing, though, to reach out. Either they're at the stage whereby they've learned a lot and they want to share it, or they just, like yourself, they have a great understanding of paying it forward and, you know, the connection of meeting new people. You know, it's like you were saying about now with gym and coffee. Do you know what I mean? It's Ireland's very small. It's very interconnected.
It's totally.
Do you know what I mean? But there is an element of people being afraid to ask.
Definitely.
I think you don't want to be a scourge. You don't want to be wrecking people's heads.
It's
a fine line, but I think we're very afraid to ask. You know what I mean? And you kind of, you're almost like, I find out suddenly you're one person away from someone.
Yeah.
Genuinely, like, you're one connection. So you know someone. And it's definitely, and it gets you so much further quicker.
Totally.
I think that's the biggest thing. And it's something I've had to realize as well, is not to be proud and not to be afraid.
Yeah.
Because it gets, like, you can spend 6 months Googling something and still not understand it.
Yeah.
Or you can go and chat to someone like yourself and, like, I have one question.
Yeah.
It's wrecking my head.
Yeah.
How do I fix this?
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. Totally. I think you're right that you do meet a lot of people for whatever reason, or maybe, but certainly within the entrepreneur, like, if anyone has been an entrepreneur, they've got help along the way. Yeah. Like, very few people have just existed in a bubble and kind of succeeded without help. So I think if you come at it from that context, some people may, but most people, if they get an email or a text from someone who wants to dig out, they'll try and facilitate you. Like, most people will. And that's, I think that's an Irish thing as well. I think people want to see people succeed.
Take me back to, you mentioned something almost in passing there, that you're playing for WGA at the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a big commitment.
Starting
a business and doing that at the same time?
Yeah, it was. I was involved with the panel for 3 years, got pretty badly injured in the first year and the third year. Got a kind of a full year in the second year and was involved. We got to the semi-final. We lost to Cork. So, yeah, I suppose it was. It was at that kind of piece where I was just finishing up the kind of sort of legal industry piece, transitioning into something different. And in the end, kind of once Legacy got going, I kind of wasn't involved with the team at that point. So Bernard, I would have seen it obviously firsthand with him, how much commitment is required to play inter-county football now. And it probably, you know, in hindsight benefited us that one of us could kind of burn the midnight oil a little bit more. So I think in the period that I was sort of playing, I was probably, it was very challenging because I was working, I was studying as a solicitor. And then just as I began to come out of that and finish my studies and work for a year, that would have been kind of when I sort of finished playing up with Dublin. But when I look back now, it was definitely probably helpful that I was able to kind of probably singularly focus on the company in the early stages. But obviously having Bernard part of the team and the profile that he had was definitely a positive. So it kind of probably naturally worked nicely that we could combine his presence on the team and all the networking and the profile that came with that together with probably, you know, the reality of inter-county football even then, and it's probably even a little bit more significant now, would just be the, you know, it's a big commitment. You know?
How did you balance your time? How did you allocate your hours? Because that's something entrepreneurs are always struggling with, is just where to focus. Because when you have a blank page, off you can fill it with absolute stuff to waste your time, but you had to be in a certain place at a certain time and then balance career and a startup. So how did you do that?
I guess it's still a challenge. I'm still sitting down on a Sunday evening trying to figure out how I'm going to spend my week and how I'm going to add most value. So I probably even more so now have become, and I definitely don't have all the answers, but I've become probably obsessed with that, that ability, that feeling that if you're coming to Friday evening and you haven't really been added value across, and it doesn't always have to be. I think sometimes a hard thing for me was having worked as a solicitor, which is a very, primarily it's an execution, it's a very transactional role. So you're it's an hourly rate, you quantify your input by hours. So it's all related to hours. I think when you move into more of an entrepreneurial role, sometimes it's, you know, a cup of coffee and a notebook and just an hour to take a step back and kind of see what exactly is happening in my organization that is very hard sometimes to justify when you're in a startup type mode. But it's something that even now I'm kind of allocating time every week. And it's maybe sometimes hard to figure out what exactly you got at the end of it. You might end up only with a page, but there could be something in that that just gives you a level of clarity. And I think clarity of thought in a very dynamic startup environment is really important.
Ask that purely selfishly because that's something I try to do every week, and every week I'm still trying to perfect it.
I think
it's like you say, justifying it can often be hard because you're like sitting in insomnia and you've got your notepad and you're writing away. You kind of feel you should be doing something else. And it's always that
because there's always another potential client you could meet. There's
another
always
email
you could send, and I think it's about the, for me, and it was hard. I remember in the early years, it was hard, but at the end of the day, you've got to try and understand where is your strengths? Like, where is the bit that you can add most to the business? And if it is in a particular area, then you've got to spend time on that every week. And then kind of maybe at the end of the week, analyze to see where you're spending your time. I think that, you know, I think we all are probably trying to figure out a way through it, but you're only going to get better probably by looking at the end of the week. So I say, right, how much time do I spend on sales? How much time do I spend on client relations? And trying to see, weigh it up to see, am I spending my time the way I should be? But
do you have any systems of how you do that, or is it just simply notepad pen?
Notepad pen. I can't think of the name right offhand, but I was given a model where you kind of have four quadrants, and I actually have a system whereby it's sort of things to be done sort of now, things to be done from a strategic level, and I would then allocate parts of my week to the strategic bits and just block it off, and then I would sort of segment other parts of my day into the blocks that are probably more stuff that I just need to get out, whether it's a block of emails. But yeah. I have still, like, I block off my emails, kind of. I'm only looking at emails sort of twice a day at this point, like 12:30 and 4:30. So I kind of have a little plug-in into my Gmail that allows me to pause my inbox twice a day. Being honest, it's still a work in progress. Because you just have this habit, but definitely it does free you in some ways, and you can put in an auto respond to say, you know, at the moment I'm in a meeting or I'm not accessible, because then you feel
Tim
like
Ferriss style,
I've read Tim's, but yeah, so you kind of you read these things, and obviously 90% of it maybe you find it hard to impact, but definitely
it's finding the discipline.
And that's probably a little bit of the sport piece. Like, sport is about discipline at the end of the day, and if you can just discipline yourself to do it over time, then it just becomes a habit. And if it's a habit, then it just becomes part of how you perform at your best. And at the end of the day, that's probably what we're all trying to do, is kind of get the most out of ourselves every week.
Did the sports background help you?
Yeah, it did. It helped probably a couple of ways. It definitely helped with, I suppose, that sort of being able to figure stuff out. I think within sport, you know, and I would have had various injuries over the course of my career, cruciate ligaments, ankle ruptures, and all sorts of things that would have been considered setbacks. But you're kind of just off the back of the injury, you're given 6 months of program to do, and then it's just pure discipline. Then it's just duty exercise every day. And probably when I look back now, what the injuries were really frustrating for me, because they obviously prevented me from playing football, but they definitely have given me the ability to have a level of discipline in what I do that when I, yeah. So I suppose everything, maybe you kind of, this is the journey of life you're on, I guess. And certainly that's something I took out of the injuries, the discipline piece. So definitely the discipline piece, and dealing with like setbacks, like that's definitely something that is part of business, I think. And I think sport teaches you, whether it's injuries, whether it's dealing with defeat. Like, I think even, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, underage sport and everyone being a winner and that whole kind of piece.
I was listening to Joe Rogan talking about that during the week. He's like, my youngest daughter is playing a football match there, soccer, so it'll be over there. And he's like, they don't keep score.
Yeah.
He's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, he was saying that. He's like, you know, it just doesn't make sense. He's like, sport is important for learning exactly the lessons you talked about there.
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of, certainly, like, there are winners and losers at the end of the day. And I think what sport does is it, you know, when losing isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, we routine, you know, you lose a client or an event doesn't go well, you learn so much from that.
Huge.
I think that that's
often more.
Yeah, totally.
You suddenly sit down and stop and go, right, what do we do? Whenever something goes wrong with us, I'm always like, right, what do we do? What do we not do that we can do for next time?
But without winning or losing, I don't know how do you set that up in a way? So you've got to certainly, I would think at a point, maybe, you know, if they're 5, 6, 7, maybe I would understand why, maybe at that point. But at some point, when they're in that developmental stage, I would have thought that, learning how to deal with defeat and understanding that that's part of life.
Yeah, that's not the end of the world. There'll be another game next week. Yeah. Same as business. There'll be another client. There'll be another chance.
There'll be another. And that's the beauty of business. There's always, and like some, I'm sure you've, and you'll, I'm sure you'll talk to other people, but you kind of sometimes are like, this isn't working. Like,
in the early stages, it's like pressing the red button.
Yeah.
Like,
what are we doing here? Like, and I think, but then you get a phone call or someone sends you an email or you get an opportunity, and and then something comes out of that and you're kind of like, that's why I'm doing this. I'm doing that for the sense of, purpose and energy and drive that comes with this, it's kind of on me, you know. And I think that's probably the last point on the sport piece. Like, accountability is a big part of sport, and you've got to, you know, whether it's an individual sport or a team, you're accountable for, this is my job on the pitch and I need to try and deliver upon what I'm expected to do. And I think within business, certainly because most businesses are set up as teams, you've got to have that sense of ownership that I'm going to do this task, or I'm going to do this because that's what I'm committing to the group or to the team to do. So I think, yeah, like lots of learnings, but probably they're probably some of the main ones. Mm-hmm. And probably as I kind of think now, it's definitely, so probably to talk a little bit about where I'm at now in terms of pep talk. So I'm trying to think, roughly about three and a half years into Legacy. It was around the time that Dublin were beginning to be really successful. And we would have been in a number of meetings with senior people in large organizations managing hundreds of people. And this conversation kept coming around, you know, how's it going with Dublin? You know, what are you doing at the moment? Tell me a bit about how you're sustaining performance. How do you scheme to keep this balance? So for example, with Bernard, you know, you have your personal life, your business, your sport. I'd love to have 100 of you in my organization. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing. And so four or five conversations were like, Jesus, there's something in this. There's an appetite among senior leaders, to your point a little bit when we were chatting at the start about sports people, and I'm really curious as to what makes them tick, and what is the bit that they have that maybe other people don't have, and can I take a little bit of that and bring it into my organization? And obviously, like, Dublin have now gone to a point where they are, as and there's lots of other teams that are, you know, doing lots of this kind of areas, but they're all looking for a little competitive edge.
Little 1%.
Yeah, and that now is, funnily enough, probably oftentimes not necessarily on the pitch. So it's not necessarily between the white lines. It's kind of like, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's kind of having human conversations with people, you know, being a little bit vulnerable and giving feedback around, you know, you listen even the other day to talk about Jack McCaffrey talk, and what came across to me was fundamentally they're just so close as a group, and when you know, the challenge for other teams will be, yes, they probably can, you can definitely get to a point where you could be as fit as Dublin, but are you going to be able to match their bond and how close they are as a group? And people talk about the last 10 minutes. Part of that last 10 minutes is, this is a group that are so together that it has an energy on sort of a that 1%. You can't quite put your finger on what it is, but when Dublin in the replay of the game, you know, make 5 turnovers in the last 10 minutes, part of that's fitness, but part of that is just this bond and this togetherness that's like, we're not going to die today, we're going to get through this. And I think that is part of those kind of what we see in terms of the evolution of business and where businesses are trying to get to, is in much and all as we're so connected now, how do we bring a little more of the human side back into business, because that's probably what's going to get you a little more performance or a little more engaged in the end. So kind of going back to, so in the end, we probably had 7-8 conversations with loads of different senior leaders chatting about this concept of well-being, performance. Tell me what you're doing to get the best out of yourself. And we said, there's something in this. So we you know, in the early stages, we started kind of delivering some on-site talks. So Bernard would deliver some stuff around what he's doing in the space. Landed really well, but obviously the challenge with a talk is, it's in essence it's a talk, and it's kind of, it's brilliant in and of itself, but probably for sustainable change or to make a real impact in an organization, somewhat harder.
Do people sit there for 40 minutes, think, oh, that was really interesting, and then go back to their desk, put on their headphones and continue on as they were?
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, they admire people like Bernard and guys in really positions of, you know, high achievers, high performers, but it's hard to relate. You know, it's hard to relate to a guy who gets up every morning, goes to the gym at 5 o'clock, and then goes home in the evening and does another gym session or whatever. Yeah. So he's, for a person who's just not in that space, I'm inspired by what you're saying and I admire you massively, but for me to take away something like that and impact it on my own life, it's just hard. Like, yes, you might go home and say, I'm going to do this, but then actually doing it.
Yeah.
And I think, that's just life. So I think, so what we did then is we kind of went away and we tried to figure out a way of taking these kind of high performance ingredients and packaging it up in a way that would appeal to the masses, that would appeal to a broad group of people. Because I think if you were to try and offer a senior leader, what we wanted to offer them was sustainable change over time, not a one-hit wonder. Because I think, and there's loads of great speakers out there that deliver that, and that has a role. And we even
that's now, almost entertainment, though. That's almost
Listen, I'm sure we've all been to really inspiring talks, but it's probably challenging to scale that over time. So we went away, and probably Legacy was still growing, and we were spending a lot of time in that. And then we brought in a girl by the name of Michelle Fogarty, who at the time was working across, I think was probably initially in Twitter, and then had moved to another company. And she had a lot of experience in the world of HR. So 20 years experience in people, and what makes people tick. Yeah. And how do we, so we felt that was really important to the evolution of what we were going to create.
Did you think this is a new business, or is this an add-on for Legacy, or do you think this is something totally different?
I think we probably at the time didn't know what it was. If I'm honest.
That's the best answer, yeah.
We were kind of like, there's something in this. I think we probably felt at the time, though, having, as I mentioned earlier, evolved Legacy to the point where it was like, okay, we know what Legacy is.
Yeah.
We know what it can do. We were probably a bit like, oh, hold on now. We're just after figuring out our sweet spot with Legacy. It's about brands. It's about delivering campaigns and that are going to be, memorable and resonate, with sports fans and consumers. But now we're getting asked to deliver what would be described as, performance workshops, culture, employee engagement, that space. So in the end we said, no, that's not going to work. We're not going to be able to. We've just figured out what Legacy is about. So let's have a little think and figure out repositioning of Pep Talk, which became Pep Talk. So again, went through a kind of a discovery process with Michelle and Dave again. So we ended up having the four of us kind of came together and set up what is now Pep Talk, separate company. And with its kind of, I suppose, mission was to deliver this sort of employee engagement built around small behavioral changes over time. But sustainable performance at its core, I think. And I think that's, for us, is where the world of work for us is moving to this concept of performance being about, for a person, being about the whole person, not just the employee. So if I want to get the best out of you, I need to understand what makes you whole, I suppose, and what can I do outside of you executing on your, doing your job. But what about, what are you excited about? Yeah. What are you passionate about? What within your own world can I help you with? And that's what Pep Talk is trying to do. It's trying to give the tools to organizations to help them develop their people in a different way than maybe what they've done. So it sort of is exciting, yeah. I mean, and so we set up the organization, Pep Talk, probably around two and a half years ago now. And over that time, I'm now sort of spending more time in Pep Talk. We've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to bring in some more seasoned senior people within Legacy. And now for the moment, I'm kind of sort of running Pep Talk day to day, and really enjoying it, challenging in lots of ways. I mean, it's a technology company at its heart. So we've spent some time developing technology infrastructure that allows us to my point at the start, to scale what we're doing. And I think for organizations, scale is important because they want to be able to, if it's something like this where it's about developing people, they want to be able to offer that to as many people as possible. So we're part of, we raised some money. We raised over €500,000 euro over the last 18 months. And we're now kind of have some ambitious targets that we're going to try and reach over the next 18 months to further develop our technology. We're going to be entering some international markets, in London and further afield.
And so how does it work if a company decides to bring in Pep Talk? Like, what does it involve?
So it's Yeah, I suppose it's like everything. It's a process. It's a process that we go through. So we tend to work with our... So if you look at it from the point of view of this being as much about culture and understanding where an organization is, how it's interacting with its people now. So we spend roughly 6 weeks working with the senior leaders and the managers of the organizations we work with to develop a strategy around how we're going to roll this out. So onboarding a client roughly takes about 6 weeks, and then we deploy our technology into the company. It's a couple of different strands. So there's a mobile app for the employees. There's a leadership program that runs alongside the employee app for the managers. And again, when you think of that, that makes sense, because your managers are so important. You know, there's a great, like 70% of people leave organizations because of bad managers.
It's huge.
So, and it's a hard thing. Some people, executing your role and becoming a manager are two very different things. And I think what we're trying to do is help managers understand to be a modern, empathetic, future focused leader. It is about trying to engage with people as human beings and kind of understand a little bit more about what makes them tick. And I think what Pep Talk has done, it's in essence a tool. It allows a conversation to happen between me and you. Let's say we're having our weekly meeting and it comes up as a line item. How's the Pep Talk program going? What sort of content are you interested in? So within the program, then we take a very broad view of sort of well-being, let's say. So we would offer everything from content around parenting to content around financial well-being. So it's so a person can go in and sort of go on their own personal journey.
So it's tailored to
They can consume content in their own sort of time. They can access it when they want. A couple of times a year, we'll bring the organization together for a sort of a competition. So whether that's a bit of fitness or activity. So that's generally just to drive a bit of internal engagement. But by and large, it is about giving that sort of personal opportunity for someone to develop themselves. And what the manager can then do over time is support that person, so they can bring it up and they can elevate its importance. Because if I never bring it up, then why should I bother? So it's about just trying to have a conversation that you mightn't have had before around a topic that you might not know anything about me as an employee. It's a very exciting area, because I feel it's an area that when we look at companies and where there's potential room for improvement and growth, it is in, for me, probably where high performance sport was at 10 years ago, when they looked at people as they look at athletes and they say, what can we do to make this person as good as they can possibly be? And there's only so much we can do on their skill set, but we can give them all these other things, and they might do them all at the same time, but so many sports people leverage different things now to get them to be the best they can be. And if you take a part of that mindset into work, it's no different to, maybe taking out and doing a little bit of mindfulness once a day. You make better decisions at work. You're calmer at work. You probably are in a better mood to talk to your colleagues. It might be a small thing, but that's the thing that you do to get yourself right to take on the day.
Yeah.
And I think that for me is where Pep Talk can play a role in really sort of trying to lead in how organizations can approach reimagining almost of how people perform and how we can get the best out of them. Because if you get the best out of them outside of them as an employee, then that's really exciting. And so I think it's definitely some of the learnings we've had from high performance sport are definitely impacting on some of our philosophy around this whole concept. And I think probably lastly, you've probably seen with Pep Talk, our brand is important in the context of, you'll see it there behind you, the big Pep Talks character. To my point earlier, I think the area is somewhat, it has to be accessible, it has to be fun for people, because I think the world is probably, and there's enough tools and productivity pieces out there But this is a little bit of brevity. It's a little bit of just...
No one wants more work.
Exactly.
No one wants it to feel like more work. Exactly. Oh, another KPI for you this month.
But I think that's why, there's an increasing, enterprise software there's a consumerization of enterprise software. People have an expectation now that it's going to be easy to use, that it's going to be friendly, it's going to be fun, that it's going to be something that I'm happy to get involved in. So we came at it from that angle, and that's why the brand, in terms of appealing to people, meeting people where they're at, and saying that this is something for you, help you in your own, personal development. There's going to be stuff in here that you can engage with in and of your own time. Your employer obviously is part of the conversation, but really it's about empowering you. But it doesn't look and feel too corporate. So it's not another mandatory program that I have to do. It's more so, listen, it's fun, it's friendly, get involved. And we've done okay. I mean, we're working with some nice clients, Northern Trust, Mercury Engineering, KCI Manufacturing, pharmaceutical companies such as Grifols. And we're signing up some interesting companies both here and some interesting conversations outside of Ireland as well. So,
Is it different this time around, starting again?
Is it different? Yeah, it is. I think like everything you develop your own leadership style, you develop your own skills. As I mentioned earlier, it's like there's a steep learning curve with any kind of venture that you take on.
I suppose the better question is, are you more relaxed about this one in terms of what you kill with legacy, whereas this time you've a little bit more scope?
There's more scope, but the nature of some of the technology companies is there's a focus on delivering revenue targets because we've obviously invested in technology and we need to kind of get to the point where we feel we can further grow, and we obviously would have targets around further fundraising cycles, so we need to hit our revenue targets to make that funding work.
Okay.
So it comes with it's a different model in that sense. So ours is a subscription model, so it's a 12-month program, it's a monthly reoccurring piece. Legacy is obviously more of a kind of consultancy business. So I think on the whole, it's challenging but exciting. I think that's probably for me what gets me up is the opportunity in every day to move closer to where you're trying to get to. And that for us is to grow an internationally recognized company that's making a real difference in companies when it comes to how they interact with their people and how they engage. And I think that's very, very exciting, getting to time to spend some time in London. I spent some time in New York earlier on in the year as well. And you get to meet lots of different companies, lots of different people. And, people are going to become, much and all as the robots are coming, people are still going to be, and it's probably going to be the soft skills, creativity, how you're going to interact with people, your ability to motivate and inspire other people to come on a journey with you. I think they're increasingly going to be the skills that are going to be most important to organizations. So in that context, we're hopefully at a really nice juncture to be able to help organizations with that. Yes, are some jobs going to need to be repositioned and people are going to need to reskill? Definitely. But it's with platforms and technology such as Pep Talk that they can do that in a way that works for them. It's very, very exciting.
And how are you juggling having two companies effectively?
I suppose to my point earlier, and I was saying to you earlier, I have a 1-year-old as well thrown into the mix. So I have a very understanding wife, which is the start.
It's key to get that in there.
I think what allows me to do, and I definitely am very appreciative of the team that we have in both organizations, has allowed me the opportunity to, I suppose, give give up my best to both organizations in the area. Yes, I can't spend as much. I've had to probably be very focused in what I can bring to both companies. It's probably really, so, you know, if I'm spending time in legacy, and to be honest, it's definitely not as much time as I'd like, but that's just the nature of where we're at the moment. It's just about being really focused as to what can I bring to that organization. So again, it comes back to probably the conversation we had earlier about being disciplined about your time. But the trust that we have at a senior leadership level across the companies is key. Because with that comes, you know, the ability to work together, collaborate. And I think if that trust wasn't there, it'd be a lot more difficult. So I think for me, it's challenging now. It is challenging. So, but spending time to kind of think about I've had to as well spend time recharging as much as anything. So I would find now on a Friday evening that I'd be pretty, you know, it's emotionally draining as much as anything.
You've literally read my mind on the next question. How do you, you know, because you're in the wellness space, and how do you look after yourself? Like, what are the things that you do?
I still play GA. I still play at a club level. So that's definitely something that for my headspace is really important.
I think that's something that entrepreneurs are notoriously bad for. Just getting out of their own head, just closing the laptop. So you still play GA?
Still play GA twice a week. And again, it probably gives me a sort of physical outlet, but it also gives me a social outlet as well. So like there's guys there that I've played football with for years, and they don't really kind of, in some ways, care about the business.
And that's beautiful.
I'm in there as like just another player trying to, you know, win matches. And that kind of is a very refreshing environment to be around, I think. So GA has always probably throughout my career in terms of my studies, and then as I progressed into the companies, sport has probably been that release valve as well, that you maybe, now that I even say it, it probably isn't something you think about it as much at the time. Because at one stage when I was, you know, focused on Intercounty, it was probably full on, like it was a more, but now that I probably have a bit more balance in terms of business and sport, it'd be something that I'd probably, you know, as I come to the end of my GA career, I don't know how much longer I've left, figuring out a way of keeping that in my life is something that I need to definitely be very mindful of, because it is, you do hear, like it is, entrepreneurship is being able to switch off is hard. And it's a catch 22, because I think when I meet people in the space, they tend to be quite obsessive. You probably need a bit of that though.
Like it's find that line. That's what I always try to figure out from people like yourself, like high performers who are doing it at a high level. I always try to draw out that from them, just so I can literally try and force it myself. It's like, how do you find that line about being supremely self-confident, borderline obsessed with the business, but also having your mental health as well?
Yeah. And I think having an awareness that you cannot, you know, this even, you know, this is what we preach, you know, this is what we talk about in Pep Talk, and it's something that we are, you know, sustaining performance over time is only going to be done by creating the right habits. And I think that, and I think it's about trying to experiment, try mindfulness. It might be for you, you might prefer, you know, going for a walk in the park, going for a run. I think sometimes maybe you might try something, doesn't really work for you, and then you just go back into an old habit. So I think if we, you know, that is fundamentally what Pep Talk is about. It's sustainability of performance over a long period is what we're trying to preach, and it's on us and on me, I guess, to kind of, I need to live that, you know, you need to have that balance. So it's not easy, and every week comes with its own kind of, you know, business and the nature of it. You get it, you know, you get your 2 days and it's gone great, and then something comes over the hill, and you're kind of in the trenches for a couple of days trying to get through it, and that's just part of it as well. But I think, yeah, it's just a, it's just a, I think the self-awareness piece is important. At least if you understand that, right, this week was a full-on week, next week I need to spend time. And I think if you look at it, if you're aware enough to know that this is how, you know, if I don't keep a balance in my life, and having a baby is definitely one way of doing that. Because partly you want to spend time at the weekend with family, and you want to take that. So often, I mean, for a few years ago, my Saturdays and probably a chunk of my Sundays would have been working.
Okay.
And now with the little Noah, I actually have not so much a reason, but there's a need for me to be.
You have to be there.
Yeah, and I need to disconnect. And it probably, I would argue, since Noah's been born, there's definitely, it further focuses you, because there's only so much time you can spend working every day. And this is the big thing, as in, if it's 4 hours of really deep work and you're very happy with that, maybe you can leave it for the day then. Now, it's hard. I'm not saying that I do that every day, but I do think, by compartmentalizing those bits, you can hopefully develop a strategy as to how you're going to keep some level of balance between them, and probably having that awareness of what's important to you. I mean, that's something I talked a bit about earlier on with Fran. Happily to admit, like, this, he's a career coach for me, and I definitely would recommend to anyone who was, one, unsure what they wanted to do, or two, was in a space where just having someone to support you, and it's probably not maybe your parents, or maybe not your partner, because sometimes I completely understand it's difficult sometimes to bring them into your world completely. So for me personally, the 7 years I've been working with Fran has been such an important release valve for me to be able to reassess things from a monthly basis and say, this is how the month went. And at the moment, we're kind of just trying to figure out, you know, trying to build that sort of framework with which to say what's important for you in your life, and what are you going to do over the next little while to make sure that you have that balance.
Okay.
So I think partly, I'd be saying kind of to try and literally put down on paper what are the things, you know, because I think when you get into entrepreneurship, it is about what are you building towards, and what's, you know, what does success look like for you? And it's hard.
Yeah, what is good? Like,
and it's partly about trying to just make sure that you're on a path that you want to continue on and go down, because definitely algebra, it's not for everyone. I think that it's, you know, and at times I'll be really honest, you envy people who maybe have a, you know, a 9-to-5-ish type job. It's probably not something that I wouldn't want it, but definitely at times when you're in the whirlwind of entrepreneurship, it can, you know, you kind of look across the road and say, God, it'd be nice to be.
Yeah, look at your man heading off there at 5, not a care in the world, golf clubs in the car.
So I think there's, but I think it's definitely important for everyone, but definitely people that are sort of in the space that we're in, to just have a sense of where we're heading to, and then to be able to talk about a bit of what's important.
That's really interesting, that kind of monthly check-in, I guess, you have.
It's really important.
I think it's definitely something I'm guilty of, and I know guys, friends of mine who are entrepreneurs as well, it's definitely something we don't, I think it's accountability as well.
Totally.
You know, you know, it's easy to kind of fool yourself.
Yeah.
Easiest person in the world for yourself. Oh, flat out, everything's going great.
Yeah.
That accountability.
We're busy.
Yeah.
We're always busy
to what end?
Yeah.
I think that's really important point. That, so you meet him once a month, you run through.
Yeah, we've kind of, you'd run through, you'd sort of just, having built out a bit of a, this is what's important to James as a person. Then you're kind of sitting down every month and seeing, like, how are we doing when we do it in business every week. I mean, every week you're sitting down and you're saying, have we hit our revenue target, sales target? So when you, in terms of the the person, you definitely need to have some true north, as in, what are we building towards here? And if you do that, then I think it definitely helps as well with you in your work, because you're very, I'm very comfortable then to be able to commit the time that is necessary to achieve what you want to, because you have an overall vision of where you're trying to get to in a personal capacity, not just in a work capacity. Mm. So you're building the building blocks of what you might want to achieve in your career as an entrepreneur or whatever you want to do next. So I think having that would be definitely something that, and not a lot of people, like I was lucky enough to meet this person and have, because I remember my parents were definitely, when I started out on the journey, they weren't, they're like most parents. They want you to just have a solid job. And having done the study, it was a bit like, you're doing what? But I would highly recommend it for people to try and find that person who gives them honest feedback, but is there to go on the journey with them. And it is a journey at the end of the day. You got to look at it that way. And I think...
I mean, people look for a quick hit as well. They're just looking for like, oh, give me the quick answer. Just give me something to do for this week and then it'll be grand. Whereas, as you say, you're working with them 7 years.
Yeah, big time. And the challenge we all have with Twitter and social media is, and I would be guilty of this as well. You know, you look at, you know, entrepreneurs in other areas and you know, $1 billion raises in different companies. And, you know, there's just a, you know, the noise around different, certainly in my world, is like, you know, how do you, you've got to keep some sort of perspective around that. And it's rare you meet businesses that are overnight successes. Mm-hmm. Like it tends to be, you know, a lot of hard work.
And evolution as well, like you talked about. I found that really interesting. Both your companies come from an evolution of ideas.
Evolution of ideas.
Of being open and being responsive, but then evolving your idea over time. All the great companies come from that.
Yeah.
So none of them come out of the box and go, oh, look, there it is. It's just...
Yeah. I'm sure there probably is one, or I don't know. Yeah. No, I don't know. Because I don't know why. I think that's... When I would have sat down with Fran and talked about the company, and when we look at it now, it's like, it's chalk and cheese. Like, and I'm so happy about that, because I think, to your point, probably there's lots of great examples of successful companies that have done that, that have probably pivoted at some point or done something, having listened to a particular customer to say, I'm actually buying your product or buying your service because of this, just this piece. Yeah. I don't really need, you know, I know you keep coming in selling me this other stuff, but actually all I want is that.
Yeah.
And if you could just maybe turn that into something that's a little bit better, I'd be delighted to buy that every day from you. So
it happened a couple of weeks. I was chatting to an entrepreneur and he was like, it's going really well, but you know, we were trying for so long. And then a customer asked us to build something for them. They said,
okay,
I love your product, but could you do this? They went off, built it, and now it's going to be a global success.
Really, yeah.
He just had that light bulb moment. Yeah. He was like, that's exactly what we need to do. We're banging our head on this. It's exactly, and now he's moving to the States. It's going to be huge. You know, so it's amazing that, like you said, but I think a lot of people don't listen. They're like, no, that's what we do.
Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid to kind of take that risk of like, or been proved wrong.
Yeah.
Or perceived to be proved wrong.
Yeah. And I think that's been my experience as well, has been to like talk, like listening to that story, these type of podcasts, the ecosystem of people that are out there that have evolved their companies. And that's how you learn and grow, is by kind of understanding how companies are making a success of what they do.
I have two final questions. The last one you can think about for a second. Is there any book you'd recommend to anyone that has helped you on your journey? We give away a book every week, so I always get someone to recommend a book. So you can think about that for a second.
Yeah.
And just kind of going back to kind of the mindfulness and the GA, is there anything else you do or anything that you follow, daily habits that you follow, that kind of helps you kind of keep performing sustainably over time? That's one thing I just really took out of your conversation, the sustainability over time. I think because it's so easy to get caught up in burning out over like 2-3 months.
And again, like when you look at the journey of most startups or most young companies, you need to be able to, it ain't going to happen after 3 months. So if you, to your point, if you kind of go hell for leather at something for 3 months, and then it's like, and that's the nature, is like, oh my God, I feel spent here.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
It's like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. When if you just, I mean, listen, for me, I suppose when you ask about habits, I would be, planning my definitely planning my week is really important to me, because I find that if I come to Friday and I haven't achieved what I wanted to, then I can be very restless. I'd be very restless coming into the weekend, yeah. And then would find, so restlessness is something that I'm constantly trying to deal with and manage. And I think by forcing myself and disciplining myself to plan my week and be as much as possible sticking to that, mm-hmm. It's hard because you know something is going to come across your desk that is going to interrupt it. But if you can just try and compartmentalize your working week into the chunks and make sure that you're really laser focused on the value that your role is going to bring, then I think come Friday evening, you should allow yourself the chance to say, I can actually take a little bit of time off here, because you've added significant value into your organization in that week, and there's always more you can do. That's been the big thing for me from day one. I've said so many conversations at home, as in, like, there's always more emails, there's always more things I can do. So the world we're in is like, there's never a point where you can kind of say, oh well, that's it, I'm done. So in that context, you've got to be able to structure the week, compartmentalize it, and then on a Friday, if you have to do a little bit on a Saturday or Sunday, that's cool, but just have the ability, be kind to yourself, have the ability to just say, it's okay to get up on a Saturday, spend time with your mates or your do what you get joy from, and it's a journey, and you might end up having to work one week here and there, you know, but
it's contained.
Exactly.
You know, because I just have to get that done. If that's done, then I'm finished.
Totally. Yeah. So I think, like restlessness is something that definitely is part of that obsessive piece within me. I know that, but I know that. And I kind of know that if I, you know, sometimes I might miss my Sunday planning and I'd be like, okay, now I'm heading into Monday. And I actually would be like very uncomfortable almost, because I'm kind of like, right, now it's 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, I haven't got my week structured, and that then begins to spiral into, now I'm like, oh, this is like crap week, like I can't get it back then.
It's scary. I almost feel like I'm running.
Yeah, you're
on
running
Monday morning then. I always feel my legs are running and I'm like answering the phone and I'm frazzled. I'm the exact same as yourself. I've had weddings the last kind of two weeks, the last kind of four, and I've done that every week. Week planning. If I hit that, I can stop on a Thursday and just know I can go to the wedding and I can just stop thinking about it. The exact same as yourself. Something I've only started doing in the last, I guess, 3 months is that week planning of knowing, right, these five things, knocking them out, and then by Friday, and being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, like, these are very, in some ways, they might appear very simple things,
but the best always are. It's not this mad idea. I get up at 4 a.m. and I face due north. It's just the simple things, because that's what you can do over time.
You can do it over time, and if you hold yourself accountable, and then you bring in somebody, you know, like a, you know, some guy who kind of just every month sits with you for 30 minutes and say, like, how did we do in the previous month? And if you then begin to develop that kind of cadence, then you're like, that is the nature of that sustainable, like, you have a path that's keeping everything, you know, the guys in Dublin would say, I mean, Bernard, you know, they kind of have this idea of the trinity of your work life, your home life, and your sporting life, and you need to keep balance within that. And, you know, these guys are the high achievers, you know, this is the greatest GA team that's ever played the game.
And you'd expect if anyone's going to fall out of sync, it'd be those guys.
Yes. Yeah. And yet they're the guys who are performing at their best. Mm. So, like, there's something in that. Yes, there's not everything in there is going to be relevant to me, but surely there's a little nugget. And for me, that's the nugget. It's and then you take that and think, right, how do I actually implement that in my life? And everyone would maybe do it a little bit differently, but it is, I think the fundamentals of it are about trying to be a bit kind to yourself, because if you're in this space, like, you're definitely, you've enough going on.
You've got to live it, because
you can look back and think, you've got to and enjoy the good thing as well. That's another thing. I wouldn't be brilliant at it, but, you know, it's probably, again, you know, whether it's a nice email from a client, you know, simple things, like,
because it's the bad one that burns you up. It's the bad one that just, like, my missus is always in the same thing. She's like, just enjoy this
this time, just enjoy that happening or enjoy that. And it's true though.
Totally, because it's hard to it's hard to sell anything to anyone.
Oh yeah.
You know, like to convince you to buy something that I have, whether it's a service or a product, that's not easy. Like, so do allow yourself at times to chat, you know, just say, that was good. We need to obviously keep doing that, but I think otherwise you'll just end up on this continuous cycle of, you know, not why am I doing this? This is just a continuous cycle of setback, 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 when there probably is moments of great stuff in there, but you're not actually aware enough to recognize them. And if you recognize them, then I mean, other guys use I don't, like, you talk that, you know, gratitude journals and stuff like that. I don't, probably could do a bit more of it, but they work for some people, and you can see why. I could see why being it's able funny. To kind of write down, you know, what you're thankful for, good stuff that's happening in your life. You know, if you develop a discipline around that, that's just another. I don't personally. I've probably tried it once or twice, could go back into it again.
It's sustainability. It's funny, I started working with a fitness coach last month, and we did our first kind of week check in there, like this week, and he sent you 10 questions, and the last one is three things you're grateful for. And I had to really think about it.
Yeah.
I had to really think about three things that achieved that week that I was grateful for. And it's been a busy week. We've done a lot. There's a lot of good stuff happening, but I had to literally...
Yeah.
I had to go...
It's interesting.
What am I? You know, and you have to really pull it out. So it's definitely something I think we can all improve on, especially as entrepreneurs.
Totally.
I've kept you for quite a while.
You're all right.
What is the book you'd recommend to anyone? It can be fiction, non-fiction, can be personal, non-personal, just anything you've enjoyed or it's kind of helped you along your journey.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, there's a few. I don't, it's definitely, I don't read as much as I should.
Yeah.
I think, again, it's just one of those things that tends to just end up in... getting pushed a little bit. On the business side, a book that I read recently in the last year, it's called Subscribed. It's excellent.
I read it, it's fantastic.
One, it just, there's some stuff that you can take away and think about for your own business. Two, it just gives you a little bit of a view into the future and the concept of not necessarily needing to own a whole lot.
It's super. It's really good read.
So, that would be something from a business perspective. I'm trying to get you something from a fiction perspective as well, because I am into I do enjoy reading. It tends to be holidays when I get to do most of it.
I find I always struggle to remember fiction because I read fiction last thing at night and I do about 30 minutes on the Kindle, but I'll often burn through them quite quickly, and it's more of a relaxation thing, whereas I read non-fiction during the day trying to like learn something.
Exactly the same.
When I've got a problem, I might sit down 30 minutes in the morning and I might read like non-fiction just to get someone's like biographies and things like that. So I can often kind of burn through fiction. And one of the girls asked me the other day, she's like, oh, you read a lot of fiction, can you give me the last best one you read? I was like, and considering we give away a book a week, I was struggling to do it's always the non-fiction ones that stay with me.
I don't know. I read a couple of years ago, I read The Book Thief.
Oh, it's good?
Excellent, yeah.
Okay.
Excellent.
Okay. So we'll give away either The Book Thief, we'll give away two of them. We'll give away Subscribed and The Book Thief. So all someone's got to do to win is put up on social media, can be anything across, just tag Pep Talk and myself, and then win a copy of either one of those.
Great.
James, thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for your time.
Great chat.
And that was episode 27. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you want to win either of those two books that James mentioned, Subscribed and The Book Thief, I'm going to do it a little bit differently this week. I'm going to do one as normal in terms of share the episode, tag Pep Talk, and tag myself, Mr. Gary Fox, on social media. So that can be LinkedIn, Twitter, wherever you like. I'm on all of them, and Pep Talk are on all of them as well. So share that. And for the second one, I'm going to do a little bit of a quiz. If you were listening, I hope you were, you've made it this far. James talked about his first big deal with Legacy Communications. It was with a clothing brand. So I think the first person to send me the answer to that will win a copy of the book. So off you go. I will talk to you next week for episode 28. See you then.